For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
We'll turn to the grad students who've been thoughtfully here today. So, any comments, questions? Okay, Belchka.
I don't know how relevant it is. Clearly, Dogen used koan in his teaching. So, when were they stopped to being used, or were they stopped ever in Soto sect as a teaching book?
So the question is, when were they stopped?
Yeah, or if they were ever stopped. Because, you know, it's just a Rinzai would have gone and so on. Known as circumeditation, so.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that anyone really knows the answer to that, but I suspect it's a lot later than we suspect. In other words, of course, for a long time, Dogen's Shobogenzo was not published. It was not readily available. And then when it became available, initially it was ignored. It was not studied that much. But gradually, over time, it became more well-known. And by around the early 1920s, it had become regarded as a great masterpiece. And from that point forward, I think the position of Dogen becomes ever more prominent, and as he becomes more prominent, there's sort of a competition over who to define, or who can define him and how he should be defined. And part of that process of defining Dogen is to draw contrast between him and other people. And this I think, is when we begin to get some of these stereotyped images that now we're trying to revise and rectify. And so I suspect around that time, but you know, that's talking about Dogen on an intellectual level. In terms of actual practice, it's much less clear.
Let me add something.
Okay. That's what you mean, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By using koans.
Yeah.
And there are different uses. So to hold them up as a topic for commentary in a Dharma hall, or to study them in the context of reading a text, there's no necessary association of them in that context with the practice of meditation or zazen. In the Rinzai tradition, you're supposed to work on the koan first and foremost while you're sitting in zazen. And while you're sitting in zazen, the bell rings for doksan, which is the individual meeting with the master. And anyone who wants to go talk to the master about their koan jumps up and runs and lines up and sees the master and then comes back to the meditation hall. So that's a tradition that's been used in Rinzai Zen since the Edo period, at least. So let's say 200 or 300 years. And Soto, as far as I know, has never used koans in exactly that way. So it depends what you mean by use them.
I was more referring to over during the sermons or explanations of.
You know, they're still used today in for example, Dharma combat ceremony, where the head seat is going to sit in for the abbot and prove that he's qualified to be an abbot himself. And so there's a kind of very formal presentation of a koan, and he responds. You know, you could say, well, that's highly ritualized. It's not exactly spontaneous. It's so not spontaneous that in the Soto rules that I translated the night before, there's another ritual where the abbot and the head seat get together and practice what they're going to do. So even like the cheat the night before is now formalized and is written into the rules. But anyway, they still go on with that.
Well, in terms of the question, though, I think it might be relevant, Will, if you could say something about what you talk about in Soto Zen medieval Japan, the Kirigami tradition in Soto that Ishikawa Reizan looked at. That seems relevant, if you could say a little.
Well, yeah, I should note, as Dan reminds me, throughout medieval times, again, we don't know how early, but once we start having documentary records, one of the main literary activities of Soto teachers throughout medieval times down to early Tokugawa, so let's say from 14th century down to 17th century, was compiling list of koans and their answers, alternative answers, the poems that go with them. And sometimes these were compiled as curriculums for study and would be part of the teaching process and part of the Dharma transmission process. Sometimes these were public and actually published, printed works. But certainly one could not be considered a true Zen teacher unless one was fluent with koan literature in the manner that Griff so skillfully demonstrated for us.
Yeah, let me add one more point, which is, Will Butterford has a whole chapter on this in that book. Commentary on koans within the Soto school also included commentary on the Rinzai Roku, the record of Rinzai. Of course, we associate with the Rinzai school, and Mumankan, the gateless gate that we associate with the Rinzai school. So I think the lines of distinction between the schools were, it was a lot less strict pre-Edo period, but then Edo period sets in, and that causes the sects to have to define themselves. And if you take a position that you stand for this, it has to be different from what the other school stands for, because what's the point of having you if you're doing the same thing as the other one? So that's where I think you get the koan. Rinzai is koan, Soto is zazen, and then we're still left with that legacy. But good. Thank you for that question. Any of our other grad students? Yes.
It's intimidating to have such a wonderful panel. And first of all, just thank you so much for a wonderful day. It's been... very interesting. So the task of having the opportunity to ask one question is daunting, because this is the opportunity. But so I'm going to be very egotistical and ask something that I care about for my own research, if that's okay. So. And it's with regard to the poems that we saw in your handout. He's following the rules of the seven character Juyeju. So it's an abbreviated regulated verse, which is four lines, and there are very strict tonal patterns, not just the rhyme pattern, but the pattern for the tones is just very, very meticulous. So you can only rhyme in rising tones in lines 1, 2, and 4, or 2 and 4. And then the non-rhyming tones, characters have to be in falling tone. And then if you count three characters from the back, they have to be the opposite tone of whichever character is in the final position. So it's very, very intricate. And 300 years before Dogen, a lot of the really skillful Chinese poets at the time would break these rules deliberately, such as Wang Wei, to really show that he knows the rules, but he's an original thinker. He's not going to abide by these rules. So Dogen, being such an extravagant original thinker, he nonetheless chooses to abide very conservatively to these rules. And it made me think, why would he be so strict with himself, and why would he, is he under some kind of pressure to show that he's mastering this form of writing, or is this something he's toying with and he likes it?
Well, if you watch the film, Dogen speaks perfect modern Mandarin, but the issue of whether he actually spoke Chinese, I can tell you right now, as someone who learned my Chinese in Japan, I have no tones, and I think you would share we have tones are hopeless, right? And Dogen would have had to been, something close to a native speaker, right?
Exactly.
Unless he had a cram book, this character has this tone, we cheat now because there's little marks in our dictionaries, right? I still can't pronounce it, but... I wonder about that. I was surprised to hear that Dogen's Chinese poetry did conform. I'm still not quite convinced about that.
Okay. Well, I think that the thing that might unconvince is that, if it does, it does. But the thing that might unconvince is that Again, you go back to the Edo period. That's kind of the black the black hole for a lot of these things. Dogen's writings were heavily edited at that time, and it's possible that editors at that time, wanting to make Dogen look like he knew the rules, came in and dressed it up and yeah. changed it. And you know, that could have happened.
And there was a big influence of Chinese Buddhism in the Edo period.
Yeah, from the Baku. But
those kind of cheat sheets that list all the characters and all give all the information about the tones and the rhyme schemes and whatnot, those were already in existence in mm-hmm. China during the Song Dynasty. Mm-hmm. So Dogen could have had access to them. Mm-hmm. And I think, at least my impression is, that he's a very meticulous writer. And in his extensive record, the Eihei Koroku, there's one of the records where he thanks his patron for donating a copy of the Buddhist canon to his monastery. And from that point forward, in the record, whenever he's quoting a Buddhist text, it's in perfect agreement with the Song Dynasty edition of the Buddhist canon, where prior to that, sometimes the quotations are slightly off, where things are not quite right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's a sort of indication that when he was able to check the text, he would, and he was meticulous about it.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, so there's the meticulous, then there's the transgressive side, or the rules-breaking side. And my impression, and you know, going back to Robert's point, I think it's a similar point, would be that he wasn't that knowledgeable. So he was meticulous, he knew that. Maybe he got these cheat sheets in China, and so he knew how to do it, but he didn't feel comfortable to take license with it. So what he could take license with was the Japanese vernacular, where you quote some of the Chinese, but then you fool around with the sounds, with how, you know, you make the word plays based on the Japanese pronunciation a lot of times. So in other words, he follows the rules so strictly, partly because he's not as confident to break the rules as he is with some other forms. Good. Okay. We got to go with our, because the dean will get upset if we don't.
The graduate students are paying for this.
So. So we got two more, and then we'll open it up.
This involves a bit of East-West translation, but to what extent can we call Dogen a mystic? A mystic coming from the Greek word, one who keeps silent, and as noted earlier by Dr. Folk, well, he wasn't very silent. I mean, he had a lot of extensive writings, and I mean, you guys could have a field day with just how loaded the term mystic is, but is it applicable? Because some in Dogen studies would call him a mystical realist or some derivation thereof.
I don't think we get a lot of mileage out of it. Of course, yeah, you'd have to have your definitions lined up, okay? It's an incredibly ambiguous term, right? So...
Well, I think yeah. Kim's book, you know, when it first came out in 75, was one of the first...
Yeah.
Really, the first comprehensive study of Dogen in English, and reissued in around 04 with the subtitle Mystical Realist. And in a way, I guess, where's Shotai? Because she gets the credit for the title today, bringing it down, bringing down to earth, which evokes a famous article by Judith Burling, where she talked about not Dogen but other earlier Chan masters bringing the Buddha down to earth. So I think the realist side, you know, mystical realist meant, you know, Dogen was very concrete, pragmatic, the active presence of the Gyobutsu and that kind of thing.
You know, I have a thought here. I don't think he's going to say no. You know, when Dogen is talking about seeing things the way they are, he says nothing's hidden. He's like it's not like delusion is this veil. We're going to like rip it off and then see face to face what we only saw through a glass darkly. You know, so mystical experience, if it's direct experience of the sacred, like intuitive. you know, whether the sacred being is an other or yourself or whatever, your Buddha nature. I don't think Dogen was thinking in that way. He's saying, this is it. This is reality. That's not really very mystical. Right? It's like, it's this, nothing else. That's what you were saying. Right. Yeah. I need some backup.
No, I agree with what you just said, Griff. But another word that came to mind that is associated with mystic is contemplative, and certainly both the tradition of Christian mystics and and Dogen are contemplative in some sense. So in that sense, there is the turning within that's part of Dogen. It's not the whole of Dogen. But the basic instruction is to take the backward step, turn the light within. Then, of course, there's the bodhisattva side of expressing it in the world and expressing it in your practice, too. But that's a place where they meet.
Okay, Michael.
Okay. Question with regards to the belief in sudden versus gradual awakening. Now, is there an element, maybe, of exclusivism that arises due to this sudden versus gradual awakening debate? And what would Dogen's view on this have been? Would he have been exclusivistic? Is this, I mean, as far as drawing a boundary of, you know, who is a Buddhist and who is not a Buddhist? does he draw on this? So, you know, sudden versus gradual, I mean, if someone believed one, well, you're not a Buddhist. If you believe the other, you are. There, you know, where the boundaries lie. Did he, is this something he might have paid attention to, or was it not so important to Dogen?
Well, I don't think gradual would have translated into who's included, who's excluded. But certainly, those are very, very loaded terms in East Asian Buddhism, and somehow sudden. Has sort of the upper hand in the debate. But it's not just sudden. It also sort of implies not partial. In other words, holy. So things are not divided up into different parts, and you get one part at a time. That would be sort of the gradual. So we think, at least when I hear the English words sudden and gradual, I think in temporal terms. But it's also a question of whether something's divisible or not, whether it's indivisible.
Or all at once. But, you know,
all at once.
Okay, we have all these Dogen scholars up here. I can't think of any place where Dogen's really talking about this. Can you? Anyone else? And I do think by the, I don't think so. I mean, everyone is sudden by then. I mean, these debates raged in China in the Tang Dynasty. And by the time in Song Dynasty China, long before Dogen went, that everyone was a follower of the sixth patriarch, the sixth ancestor, Huainong. And they were all in the sudden school. That was like taken for granted. But this does come up in modern polemics.
Yeah.
Okay? And here's how it comes up. The Rinzai people and the Soto people call each other gradual. And call themselves. And here's, I'll just keep it really short, but here's how it works. The Soto people look at the Rinzai and say, you're trying to wait for awakening, Taigo, right? And you're Hashigo, step by step, like working, you know, toward awakening, right? So that's, you're gradual. And we, the Soto, they say, believe in the innate Buddha nature. We're already awakened. Right, you're already. So, what's really sudden is already, right? So, how do you get to FIU? So, if someone's wandering around lost on the campus, how do you get? You say, well, you're already there. Oh, that was fast. So that's, you know, Williams' meaning is one, like all at once, but already. That's a fundamental meaning of sudden.
Good. Yes,
okay?
Yes, yes.
So the Soto people say we're already Buddhas. We just practice to, you know, manifest our Buddhahood. You know, and then on the other side, the Rinzai people say, you know, you say you're already Buddhist, you have no awakening at all. That's what, you know, and you just sort of gradually sit there and you know, stew in Zazen, right? So it's really a stupid argument, actually. It's a stupid argument, but it's there in Japan. You know, maybe when do you first start hearing it? You know, like they start calling each other names. So they call them Buji Zen. Buji Zen means, you know, Zen with no sort of purpose, no accomplishment. That's what the Rinzai people call Soto.
Yeah. So that's from Minzan and Hakuin's time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they're getting that from people like Dahui. So it's there in Song as well.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Kana Zen versus Silent Illumination Zen is kind of a recreation of Sunday versus Gray.
That's the way I would interpret it. But I think it's exactly the terms that way you explained it.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's taken for granted that Sudden is better, but they keep debating it. Who's really Sudden?
What does Sudden mean?
I'm more Sudden than you are.
Oh, suddenly I understand.
But we want to thank the dean's office wants to thank you guys. But great, and I'm glad you stuck with us. Let's go to Mitch. Had his hand up first, I think, and then
thank you very much, all of you. Really, one of the reasons I came today was to put together the names and the faces, the names that I had seen over the years but haven't met, other than Shirakusen and Steve. And I gained a lot today. An additional reason that was very strong was the title. There was something there about bringing me down to earth that was real. I'm a street guy. I grew up in Roxbury, Mass. Okay? It was just attractive. And Shirakusen, when you made that flip, it was nice. It was comfortable. It was like settling. And then now I said, we got five translators. And there's a story, it may or may not be true, about Coleman Barks, the Rumi translator, being asked, do you love Rumi? And Coleman responded, no. Well, you would have expected this, you know. He would have surprised. The people were surprised. He says, no, I love what Rumi loved. So I'm asking you, down to earth, no challenge, because you can say nothing, we give each other a hug. What is it that you love that you think Dogen loved, and that really mirrors in you?
No, I think it's a great question, and you know, I could answer it all kinds of different ways at different times. But Griff's very, very well stated the diversity of what Sudden means. But there's a word that comes to me, wholeness, the sense of that I get from Zazen and from reading Dogen, sometimes at least, a lot of Dogen, that there's suddenly it's okay. And in that sense of that possibility of wholeness in spite of everything and all the troubles of the world and so forth, is something that brings me back to Zazen and brings me back to Dogen. So that's one response.
You know, Dogen really, really was dedicated to the Buddha Dharma, the teachings of Buddha, and he thought it was, a way to salvation, a way that it would help people. And so I identify with that. I believe that. And also, he hated bullshitters. He really did. You know, he hated phonies, and he called them out. So some of his nastiest language in Shogo Genzo is, you know, about Chinese Chan masters who he thinks are phonies, and people who are posturing and they have no clue. So, you know, actually I identify with that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you and I had talked about this once a few years ago, I think. One passage I really like is in a fascicle of the Shobo Genzo, Shoho Jiso, where he attacks some of the BSers that he doesn't like, but he's also praising his mentor Ru Jing.
And what was it about Ru Jing? You know, a lot of people say that Dogen's mentor, it probably wasn't all that great in himself, but it's primarily known because he you know, as Dogen's teacher. And if, you know, if you go to the those temples in China, and the Chinese Ministry of Religion in that province, that, you know, is kind of pushing tourism to those temples because they know that a lot of Japanese will go there, you know, and they'll kind of admit that, hey, you know, this is known because of Dogen's influence. But here's my point. When he describes in that chapter what he likes about Ru Jing, he would say that despite all the formality that goes on and all the monastic rules and regulations that go on in the temple, and he admired Ru Jing for sticking with those and not breaking the rules, which some of the BSers would do, Ru Jing would have the drum pounded in the middle of the night, would awaken the monks, bring them into his hall for a special question and answer session. And it was that kind of spontaneity. It really brings to, you know, makes it such a living kind of feeling, I think, that you get from Dogen. Because he was an outsider to China, and because he was struggling in Japan, I think even though most of his writings are, you know, on a more abstract, even if the message is concrete and realistic, but it's still kind of abstract writings, it really brings to life that the immediacy of the experience, I think. That's what does it for me.
Well, I think Dogen loved, and for him, the most important thing is Sangha. Mm-hmm. In which he can practice and share Dharma and continue that, his tradition. Mm-hmm. And it still continues.
Well, yeah, I don't really have an answer. And actually, in a way, that's kind of my answer. Thinking about it, I've been thinking the whole time since you asked the question. I'm not a very self-reflective person, but one thing I know about myself is I'm frequently confused. And I'm confused, and I sort of have to think things through, looking at them from all different points of view. And one thing, I love poetry because it allows me to see things in new ways or think about things in new ways that, and sometimes give me words for expressing feelings or thoughts that I wouldn't otherwise know how to express. And I certainly find that in Dogen as well. He presents us with so many different possibilities and perspectives and different ways of describing things. And I can certainly identify with that. It doesn't necessarily clear up any of my confusion, but at least I could explain it a little better.
Somehow I think we can all embrace everything in our own ways at a given time.
Mm-hmm. How about for you? How would you answer the question?
Intrinsic adaptability in accordance with circumstances presents itself. What is that expression? And that's what's happening. When you say holiness, when you say song, or when you say the immediacy, or you say the poetry that all of a sudden lights us up, or, you know, hey, don't bullshit me. I know, you know, I got a built-in craft detector. All of those are happening all the time. And when we get into this and we sit in these conferences, whether it's academic or the koans or sudden or like, there's something that happens. And somehow, when I get out in the streets, so to speak, I know I'm right here now, life becomes a little different. In the moment-to-moment adversarial things, that the suffering will occur, but the struggle becomes less and less and less over the suffering. And so I've shared things with you. Sure. And spirits is reading Dogen's poetry for me. And I'm not a scholar. I told Shodai, she wanted me to sit near this. I'm not a scholar. I just have a street cat. Maybe that's my bullshit. I don't know.
Mitch has a run.
We have you beat on bullshit, pants down, man.
But thank you, Mitch, for joining us. Yes.
Maybe it doesn't make any sense to try to make sense. Within the context of the vital process of going beyond Buddha, what would you think would be the reaction of Dogens in witnessing the persecution of Buddhist monks in Burma or the recent self-immolations in Tibet?
That's an important question. Being a social activist myself, I could say something from my own position. Dogen, went off to the mountains. He didn't want to stay involved in the politics of the capital. And I think there's a time for doing that and just keeping alive the practice. And so he did that, and here it is, all these years later, and all of us have some relationship to that. The Bodhisattva context, which clearly was important to Dogen, is about responding to what's going on in Burma and Tibet are venerable Buddhist countries where there's this all these atrocities, and so how do we respond to that? If I had the answer, it'd be over already, but we don't. But I think that part of the attitude of this that comes out of this vital process is to be open and to pay attention and to be willing to respond if there's some way to respond. That's not a very satisfying response, but that's what I can say.
I mean, there must have been terrible things happening in Dogen's day. I frankly don't see that he was a social activist.
But, it's also that the Dharma adapts to I agree, of course, but the Dharma adapts to different kinds of contexts. We're in a very, the leap from India to China was huge, but the leap from Japan to America, from Asia to the West, is much, much greater. Dogen was living, and most of Asian Buddhism happened in feudal times, and there was not the ideal of democracy or representation or equal justice under the law or anything like that that is part of our foundational national ideals. So we have a totally different context to try and express and respond from this vital process. Most of Asian Buddhism is a huge generalization, but this relates to the Dogen going to Kamakura. Most of how Buddhism helped improve social conditions in Asian Buddhist history was in terms of Buddhist leaders trying to awaken, bring compassion to the rulers, because that's where it was at. So we have to think creatively about how to apply the practice that Dogen helped survive, and his writing now allows us an opportunity to see.
Yes.
A question about translation. In Uchiyama Roshi's commentary on Tenzo Kyokan in Nothing is Hidden, he talks about the problem with translating terms used by Dogen that are translated generally into English by the word mind. Mind.
Mind.
In English, mind has a connotation of the intellectual mind or psychological associations, etc., philosophical associations. He suggests that the word experience or experiencing might actually be closer to the sense of what Dogen meant in that particular context. I'm wondering what you think about that, and if that type of reconceptualizing of that term could be applied more generally across Dogen's writings.
No, I'm not going to do it. sure. The English word mind doesn't mean what the Japanese word shin or kokoro means. But when you're translating, you're looking for what's close. It's like when you try to speak a foreign language, you have bad accent because you're looking in your language for the sound that your tongue knows how to make. It's closest to that thing you're hearing. And if it's Polish, you're not very close, right, for me. So, we just have to make these decisions. And also, as the translations get better known, the meaning of mind in English translations changes to be more like the Japanese. All right. And we're not going to avoid I mean, it's a good discussion. Is it better mind or better experience or better something else? Heart is another one, right? Mm-hmm. And there are other possibilities. Thought, that's another one. Okay. But any word in translation, you know, there's going to be a sort of upside and downside for whatever you pick. Mm-hmm. I think experience has a lot more baggage, and it's not the right baggage, so I would stick with mind. Anyway, we've already committed to this. It's like too late.
Yes.
I have a question about Dogen's teachings as they might have been originally understood by his students. Considering Dogen's vast knowledge of obscure koans and the incredible ambiguity, at least compared to English, as far as I know, of Japanese, and also the difference between medieval Japanese and modern Japanese, and then medieval Japanese and modern English, obviously it seems like it presents a lot of problems in really communicating his meaning, and that's sort of the enterprise that you're all engaged in, is trying to understand what was originally intended. And some things are esoteric, and some things are profound, and some things are both. And I wonder to what degree Dogen would have been thought to be a very esoteric and difficult teacher by his own students. Mm. And in comparison to the very difficult, kind of almost unapproachable figure that he comes across as, 700-800 years later, a continent away, and certainly without any context or any congruency in our context. Who would he have been to his own students?
I'd like to give one possible response, and that is I have the privilege every quarter of giving my students midterm exams and final exams. And my exams are very simple. They're essay exams. And I ask the students to, I give them, this is the topic we discussed the first week of class. This is the topic we discussed the second week of class. So I just list the topics. And they pick the ones they want to write about and explain what you've learned about that topic. What is it? Why is it important? And what does it mean? Why is it important? And wow. I must say that I learned so much from those answers, and very rarely do I have my expectations given back to me in the way that I thought I was presenting it to the class. Usually it's always something slightly different. And I think the process of communication, that's the way it works. People are going to take what you try to teach, and some aspects of it, they'll reflect back to you what you imagine yourself as. And other parts of it, they'll reflect back to you what you're really doing, even though you don't realize it, or what you're really saying, even though you don't realize that's the message. And then part of it, they're adding themselves. And that's the end result. And if we look at the documentary record, about the only evidence that we really have for judging that is a commentary on Shobo Genzo that was written by two of Dogen's students, Senne and Kyogo. And in that commentary, there are at least a couple of places where they're commenting on Chinese language that Dogen's used, and Dogen is using words which are colloquial spoken Chinese. And the commentators are unfamiliar with it, so they're trying to explain it in terms of how words would be used in classical literary style of Chinese. And so here's we have documentary evidence to show where something went right over their head because they were not familiar with the lingo that Dogen was using. But beyond that, we don't really have clear evidence to say one way or the other.
Speaking of Senna and Kyogo, their Gosho, their commentary on Shobo Genzo is so influential because it's Dogen's on students, do you think they basically got it right?
Well, that would be the orthodox interpretation.
But I'm asking you.
Sure. I mean, but they are not as obviously they're not as familiar with the Chinese language and the koan tradition as Dogen is.
Yeah. Sure.
And they're very much familiar with Japanese Buddhism. And tend to read into it a Japanese perspective that is perhaps not necessarily the one that Dogen is presenting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Good. Let me go back to your question for a moment, though. You said Dogen seems unapproachable, I think was the word you used. What makes him seem unapproachable? Him seem unapproachable compared to other figures from the...
Certainly, that's very much me coming across. This is my experience with Dogen. I find his writing very difficult, very subtle. I think I would say that's probably borne out in the enormous volume of text, like trying to explain his writings. Mm-hmm. So we don't have just have translations, but for every page of translation, we might have 200-400 pages of commentary on it. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a huge enterprise behind trying to discern what he intended.
Right.
And I wonder, to what degree is that our problem here in this time and place? Mm-hmm. And to what degree was this the case for Dogen's teachings the moment they left his mouth or the moment mm-hmm. they left his hand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, there's the editing process, but you know, let me just give a story. We've all been involved with translating different parts of it over the years, and I was looking at what I thought was a fairly simple sentence in one of them. In the Buddha Nature fascicle of Shobo Genzo, and by now there must be 6-8, you know, pretty reliable translations that you can turn to, including the Stanford one that's on the website, which is great and has like amazing annotations. But if you go back to like the one sentence, it wasn't heavily annotated, this one particular sentence, and I thought it wasn't that big a deal. But my point is, I looked at 6-8 translations; they all had a different thing. I mean, I couldn't really... I got more confused after looking at them all. And, you know, is that our fault or is that Dogen's fault? You know, are we expecting too much from him or reading too much? Do we accept it? It is all going to fit together and make sense? And maybe, you know, maybe it doesn't. I mean, all those questions do come up, I think, in the process. But, yes. And then number two. Yes.
There were some questions about... Dogen writing in Chinese style of Chinese poetry earlier, as to whether it was genuine. And since one of my areas of teaching, I studied Chinese and Japanese art and painting. The Japanese were copying Chinese painting at that time, and they were never really as good at this as the Chinese paintings, the Japanese copies. So I was just going to make that parallel.
Mm.
Yep. Could be a similarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes?
Regarding the suddenness of awakening or step-by-step gradual, could the suddenness that seems sudden maybe because of work done in previous lifetimes that might be step-by-step and then it's accumulated and unfolds, looks like very sudden now in this lifetime?
You're the only person qualified to answer that. Because you don't, that's a question that scholars don't, we refuse to answer that kind of question.
How come?
Because it's sort of a religious question.
Reincarnation.
Yeah.
Is that religious?
Oh, well, if we were going to answer that, we would have to say we believe in reincarnation. But no scholar will say that. Buddhists will like to, you know. Right. Yeah, I could answer it like as a Buddhist, but then I wouldn't. That's not the person sitting up here. Mm-hmm. The person sitting up here is the scholar. That's why we won't answer. sounds very reasonable to me, actually. You know, just as a common sense thing, sure.
So somebody's gonna answer.
Short time, please.
I'm not in the wrong.
What's that?
I'm not a drunk too. I'm not a victim here.
Okay, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
Awakening? What are you talking about? Sudden? How can it be sudden or gradual? There's no such thing. Is Santa Claus sudden or gradual? That's my answer. He's really fast, actually. He gets all around the world in one night. I don't know if it's sudden, but it's fast.
There is no sudden from my point of view. If we are in the present moment, what is sudden and what is gradual? Coming. I don't see it.
Right. Okay, that's the same answer.
That's
right. Anyone else in the panel?
The sudden and gradual thing, I agree with Griff. It's not a meaningful question to me. Excuse me, but because it's all sudden. I mean, and I guess Chenal had this synthesis of sudden and gradual and sudden awakening and gradual practice and so forth. But taking that aside, the question of rebirth. Who knows? As a Buddhist, I sort of believe in a certain way. It's not the same as reincarnation, but I had an interesting discussion with Stephen Batchelor earlier this year, and there's this famous debate between him and Bob Thurman, and Thurman says that you have to believe in rebirth or else the Bodhisattva ideal doesn't make sense. I don't agree with that, even though I sort of believe in rebirth. But Stephen Batchelor said very strongly when I said that to him, you can't do that because you're kind of copping out and assuming that you can take care of it next lifetime, and you can't do that because we don't know. Anyway, that's not my answer exactly, but that's my response.
Well, you know what? Dogen has a passage in a couple of different places. One is in the Being Time fascicle, but there are other places where he talks about four moments of time, and they correspond to the arousing of the awakening, arousing of the aspiration for awakening, bodhicitta, which Shohaku talked about, and then practice and attainment, and then post attainment cultivation, which ties in with Geno's approach based on Chinese teacher Zongmi. The point I want to make is that Dogen says it a couple of different places. The moment, the instant that you have the thought that you aspire to attain enlightenment, you already are enlightened. But of course, you know, does that make any sense? Not really, because then all of us would always be enlightened and we wouldn't have to practice and he's always very concerned that these doctrines could dissuade us from practicing because they have the antinomian implication that we already have it, so we don't need to. And the Dharma sect, which was a small Zen faction, got prohibited because of that, because it seemed like they weren't following the precepts and the regulations. But I think the teaching is powerful. I don't know if this answers your question, but I think the teaching is powerful that the moment of the thought arising in you puts you in touch with a realization of the goal, the attainment of the goal. That's unrealistic, but it's inspirational from the way I would see it. It's been a long day. Any final thoughts, comments? I want to say personally that the fact that to see everyone still here and enthusiastic and having these this great repartee with our honored guests who've flown in and have had such a long day, is a very gratifying thing for me to see everybody so interested. So I want to say that I'm going to declare this the most successful Dogen event in the history of South Florida. Maybe even the entire Sunshine State. And I hope, thank Shotai again. I want to thank Maria and Jenny and the Asian Studies office. I think they're outside, but thank all of you. Thank the speakers. And those of us who are meeting tonight at 7:30, we'll have some more discussion. So thank you.